We're up to the Mishnah on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. I just want to mention that we finished the sugya Beis Hashem of the Yud Ches Gzeros. I'll just quickly read the list to you. Ochel Ochel Rishon, Ochel Ochel Sheni, Shosem Mashkim Tmeim, Habar Rosho Verubo B'mayim She'uvim, Tahar She'naflu Al Rosho Verubo Mayim She'uvim, Ochlim shenitmu b'mashkim, kelim shenitmu b'mashkim, sefer, yadayim, ein karen liaraner, ein fallen liaraner, shocheya kelim tachas hatzinor, kol metalta mevias atuma viovia mardea, benos kusim tmeos me'arisoson, botza legas huchshar, gedule truma truma, mishehechshich nosein, Kisui Lenochri, and Piton Vishamnon Vienon Mishum Vinosehem. That's the list of the 18. Now we start the Mishnah of what's called Shvisas Kalim, which I'll explain in Mirz Hashem as we go along. The Mishnah records a machlokes between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai Omrim, Ein Shorin Dio. So we're talking about soaking ink. In the process of making ink, they would have to soak it. And this is on Erev Shabbos. And also v'samonim. These are various herbs that are used to make dye. And once again, we're not allowed to soak them. And finally, we have v'karshinan. Karshinon is some sort of kitnios, he says here, and it was made for Michael Behemon. They had to soak it in water. So in all these cases, what's happening is you're starting a process on Erev Shabbos that's going to complete itself on Shabbos. And Beit Shammai prohibited it. The only situation in which Beit Shammai would be mekil is Ela Bechdeshi Shoru Mibodyom, unless the Shriya, which means the soaking process, would be completed before Shabbos begins. And in all these cases, whether it's soaking inks or dyes or these kind of kitnios for Michael Behemoth, in all these cases, Beit Shammai prohibit it unless it's enough time that the Shriya could be completed before Shabbos. And Beis Hillel on Matir. And in Mirz Hashem, as we go along, we're going to get an insight into the Shita of Beit Shammai. After all, he's not doing Malach on Shabbos. He's just setting up the Malach on Erev Shabbos. Now that's Hakofa Aleph. We have two more Hakofos here. Hakofa Beis is Beit Shammai Omrim A nosnin unin shel pishtan. These are bundles of flax that again have to be bleached, and the bleaching process takes place by putting them into a hot oven. They would put it into some sort of a utensil, a pot, and then they would put it into an oven, and it came out white. It was bleached. And Beit Shammai say, once again, that this is prohibited. Again, because you're starting a process with these bundles of flax that's going to complete itself on Shabbos itself. And there's an additional chidush here that bleaching is considered a malach on Shabbos. So we have to discuss that as a separate issue. And again, in these cases, Beis Shammai want to see that the process is complete before Shabbos. Kadesh Yavhilu Yavilu Miba'od Yom. Yavhilu is Miloshen Chimum. It should be heated before Shabbos. And once it's heated, then it's already considered bleached, these bundles of flax. Then Beit Shammai say, lo yitein es hatzemer liyore. Now he's talking about placing a big cauldron, and inside the cauldron he puts dye, and he's in the process of putting the wool and dyeing it in the yore, so the wool is going to pick up the color of this dye. And that too is a melacha which, had he done it on Shabbos, he'd be chayv for melechas tzovea, which is one of the 39 melachas. Ela kidei sheyiklo ta'ayin. Unless the color would already penetrate into the wool before nightfall. Beisil matirin. Okay, now we have round number 3. Beit Shammai Omrim ein porsin mitzodos chaya viofos vidogim. We're not allowed to put out traps to catch various kinds of animals and birds and fish. Ela, unless kideshi tzodu mibodyom. Unless the tzeder process will happen before Shabbos. Beisil matirin. So there's a long discussion here about Beit Shammai in the case of Tzedah. How could he possibly know? Let's say he puts the trap in a forest or a place where there are, you know, many, many animals. How does he know that it's Kedeshi Yitzodu Vod Yom? There are many, many different animals. And apparently he puts one trap or two traps, whatever it is, but he has a limited number. And he can assume within a reasonable amount of time that those two traps, or whatever number they are, would catch animals. Again, only in a place that's highly populated by animals. Beit Shammai Omrim ein mochrin l'nachri. This is a whole new discussion. And that is about selling something to a guy. And it's on Erev Shabbos. Ein tohanim imo v'ein magbim olav. We don't help him put a burden on his donkey, and we don't alleviate the donkey of its masui, of this burden. Ela kideshi agil makom karov. Unless there's enough time and the distance is not too great, such that the guy will arrive before Shabbos at his destination. Ubeisil matir. And here, Beit Shammai are interested in something else. Not that they're concerned about a melacha that began on Erev Shabbos and completed itself on Shabbos, but they're concerned about the fact that it looks like the guy is doing melacha on behalf of the Jew. We have to assume that people will see the object, the chefetz, in the hands of the nachri, and they think that the Jew commissioned the Nachri to carry the object on his behalf. But if the guy could bring it to Makom Karov, and that would happen before Shabbos, then there's no problem. And Beisil Matir. Beit Shammai Omrim Ein Nosnin Oros Li'Abdon. We're not allowed to give skins or hides to be tanned before Shabbos. V'lo kelim l'koves. According to Beit Shammai, you're not allowed to give items of clothing that need to be laundered to a nachri, to a non-Jewish launderer. El kedei sheyasu mibod yom. If there's enough time before Shabbos that the guy could launder the clothing before Shabbos. And here too, beisil matir. Ubekulon. In all the malachas that are listed in this Mishnah above, Beis Hillel Matirim Im HaShemesh. Beis Hillel on Matir, as long as the sun has not set. Now the Mishnah quotes Rav Shimon Gamliel. And apparently, even though Rav Shimon Gamliel came from the school of Beis Hillel, nevertheless, in his family, it was his father's tradition, Nagim Hayu Beis Abba, Shayu nosnim kli lavan lekoves nachri shlosha yomim kodem l'shabbos. So apparently, the laundering process for colored clothing is a quicker one. In the case of white clothing, it's a longer process. It could take as long as 3 days until the laundering is done, is complete. And Rav Shimon Gamliel testifies that in his house, in his father's house, they were machmir, and they took the stringent view of Beit Shammai. They would not allow delivering laundry to the guy unless there was enough time, ample time before Shabbos, to complete the malacha of kibbutz. And kibbutz itself is a malacha. We're not exactly sure what the av is. It could be it's malaben. It might have other issues, perhaps makom patish, but whatever it is, this is a malacha. And the Mishnah would say that this is a machlokas stream based on Beit Shammai, but Rav Shimon Gamliel accepted the view of Beit Shammai. There's a long discussion here about whether this chumrah that Rabbi Gamliel and Beis Rabbi Gamliel took upon themselves is relevant to all the dinim of Beit Shammai, or was there some specific reason in the case of laundering that they were machmir. Now, the Mishnah addresses the following question in completion. Is there any scenario in which even Beit Shammai would agree to Beis Hillel? Vishavin, they both agree, Elu ve'elu, both Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel. Shetoanim koras Beis Habat ve'igulei agas. We're talking about the process of crushing olives or grapes, in the first case to produce oil, in the second to produce wine. And what they did was, they began the process of crushing, and then right before they were ready to collect the wine, they would place a very heavy beam, or some sort of a round disc that was very heavy, on top of the zeisim and anovim, so that the process of schita, of extracting the liquids, would continue. And in this case, even Beit Shammai agree that you're allowed to put these very heavy objects on top of the fruit, on top of the olives and grapes, such that the schita, the extraction, will continue on Shabbos. And that's based on the fact that most of the malacha has already been done. And the fact that he puts these heavy objects, that's only a secondary part of the malach. It's not the major part of the malach. Probably, if he would do this on Shabbos, although he would violate certainly an Issa Drabbanon, he would not be chayev a chatos for a malach d'oraisa. Now, once we have this machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai, for example, the case of soaking various herbs and ink on Erev Shabbos, it would seem that the soaking process itself is something that would be prohibited on Shabbos itself. And that is true even according to Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel only make ill as far as the soaking process is concerned because he did it on Erev Shabbos. And now the Gemara goes into a very fundamental machlokes about the malach of Lisha. Lisha is a two-stage process. Let's take, for example, the classic case of Lisha would be flour. So the first stage of Maleches Lisha would be to pour water over the flour. That's called Nesinas Mayim. The second stage is what's called Gibul. Gimel Yud Bet Vav Lamed. Kneading. And we're going to have a fundamental machlokes between Rebbe and Rabbi Yossi about whether shriya, which means just soaking, adding the water, is in itself a malacha of Lisha, or do I require a second stage as well, and that's gibul kneading. Mantana, who is the author of our Mishnah, asks the Gemara, Nesina samayim lidyo zohi shriyasam. That once he takes this ink and he soaks it, that itself is a full-fledged violation of Maleches Lisha, which is one of the 39 Avos Malachos. And in this case, even Beis Hillel would agree that if you violated this Malacha by Shriya on Shabbos, you'd be Chayav for Malacha. Beis Hillel only allows it on Erev Shabbos. Omer Rav Yosef, The name is very important here, so let's keep in mind it's Rav Yosef. Rebbe he. The Mishnah, assuming that Shriya is a Malacha of Lisha, reflects the Sheet of Rebbe. The Sanya we learned in the Braisa, and here the Braisa starts with the Sheet of Rebbe. Echad nosein es hakemach, v'echad nosein es hamayim, ha'achron chayav. So Reuven put the flour into a bowl on Shabbos. Shimon came along and he added the water to the bowl. Shimon is chayav for meleches lisha, even though he did not need the dough. Divrei Rebbe. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Omer, his opinion is eino chayav. Even the second fellow, we called him Shimon, who adds the water to the flour, is not chai from leches lisha ad sheyagabil, unless he does the kneading of the dough. Which means that according to Rabbi Yossi, the essence of meleches lisha is to create a new substance. We call it dibuk. Dibuk means when you coalesce, you have different parts that form one. And that can only be achieved through kneading. That's called Gibul. Our Mishnah that assumes that you'd be chayav in these cases of Shriya, even without Gibul, reflects the Sheet of Rebbe against Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. And Abai is not happy. Amalei Abai, Abai turns to Rabbi Yosef. He says, V'dilma, ad kan lo ka'amar Rabbi Yossi. When does Rabbi Yossi say that pouring the water itself onto the flour is not in and of itself? Lisha. That's only bekemach. It means that when you start a malacha, you have to perfect the malacha. That's called meleches machsheves. Meleches machsheves means it has to be a malacha chashuva. And by pouring the water over the kemach and allowing the kemach to absorb the water, that's not a complete malacha. That's not perfect. You really want to get a dough. And that's the bar gibulhu, which means that in the case of flour, the way you finally achieve your goal to create this dough is through gibul. And the sinas hamayim is not enough. Ah, voldio, but in our Mishnah, we're not talking about flour. We're talking about ink. The lav bar gibulhu, there's no need to perfect the process of creating ink. All you have to do is put the ink inside whatever liquids you soak it in. And that soaking process itself is a complete process. Ema, therefore we might say, lichayev, that even Rabbi Yossi would say, you're chayev in this case. There's no need to be dochek to try to assume our Mishnah is Rebbe, but it's against Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi only requires gibul when the gibul is relevant to this mixture, and the gibul perfects the lisha. But if the gibul is not necessary, then even Rabbi Yossi would say that yechayef for soaking. So the Gemara says lo salka daita. That's impossible. Not that it's logically impossible, but just that we have a brisa. The sanya we learned in the brisa echad nosein es ha'efer. The echad nosein es hamayim, ha'achron chayav divrei Rebbe, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ad sheyagabel. Here's a case similar to the ink, the dyo in our Mishnah, and it's called efer. Efer is ashes, and when you pour water into the ashes, you create some sort of a concoction. Although you didn't do gibul. You didn't do any sort of kneading process. You just did a soaking process. And Rebbe says, indeed, you're chayev. But Rabbi Yossi says that you're not chayev until you do gibul. So you have to actively knead this combination of water and ashes. And the Gemara thinks that this is a lav bar gibul, meaning that this case of ashes is similar to the case of ink. Because gibul is secondary, if not totally unnecessary. It's certainly not a primary element here in this malacha. What's primary here in this malacha is shriya, and yet, despite that, Rabbi Yossi Bravuda says you're potur. He wants gibul. Gibul is maisa lisha. What does that mean? There's certain actions which the Torah defines as objective and absolute conditions in the malacha. The condition for meleches lisha, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, is gibul. And if you didn't actively do gibul, you're potter. And therefore, says Rav Yosef, we don't have any option in our case of ink in our Mishnah other than to assume our Mishnah reflects the sheet of Rebbe. So Gemara says, no, the Dilma my Efer. Let's reinterpret this brisa, although it does say Efer with an Aleph, Afar. Change the Aleph to an Ayin. And the Gemara in Chulin actually says that in the Torah, the word for describing the Mechatos, which is made of Efer, is Afar. So we do have a precedent that Efer and Afar could be exchangeable words. And then if we're talking about Afar, which means dirt from the ground, to Bar Gibelhu, like that's how we make various kinds of bricks and so forth. We knead together the water with the ground, with the dirt. So the reason why Rabbi Yossi says you're not chayev in the case of Efer is because he's really talking about a case of Afar, which is a bar gibel, meaning the perfection of the malacha requires gibel, which is kneading, and he didn't need it. So the Gemara asks, we have two brises, Vasanya Efer, Vasanya Afar. One brisa says Efer, the other brisa says Afar. Apparently, in the Lashon of the brisa, these are two different terms, which means that when Rabbi Yossi says you're potter, he's talking about Efer, he's talking about ashes. So Gemara asks a rhetorical question to deflect this question. He said, Midi Gabi Adodi Tanya, were these two brisos presented to you one after the other contiguous? If they were, and they were presented in one context, then we see clearly that Efer and Afar are used by the brisa as two distinct terms. But if you have two different brises, one was authored by Rabbi Chia, who was one of the famous authors of the brisa, and then the other brisa was authored by Rav Yoshia. He was another famous author, a compilator who compiled the brisa. So it could be that in two different contexts, sometimes the word Efer is used even though it refers to Afar. Tana Rabbana. We learned in a brisa. Now this brisa is going to give us some other examples of a malacha that began on Erev Shabbos and completed itself on Shabbos. And we begin with the malacha of Zorea. Zorea means one of two things. Either he put a seed in the ground, or there's already a seed in the ground and he waters the ground. He waters the seed. That's called Mashke Zroim. Tana Rabbana, we learned in the Brisa. Potkin Mayim Legina Erev Shabbos Imchashecha. Umismales Valeches Kolayom Kuli. He's allowed to open. Potkin means poskin, to open the water. So he opens the valve that allows the water to come through the pipes and irrigate his gina, his orchard, on Erev Shabbos, even though it's right before nightfall. And now this garden of his will be full of water, and that would be a malach on Shabbos of Zoreah, and it's mutter. The Gemara is going to assume that this brisa reflects the sheet of Beit Shammai, that you're allowed to start a malach on Erev Shabbos that completes itself on Shabbos. Then the Gemara is going to backtrack. But umeinichim mugmar, you're allowed to take incense. In those days, they would burn incense, and the smoke, the smell would go up into various kelim, taksa kelim. Kelim usually means begadim, meaning clothes, and that would give the clothes a very fragrant odor. And here we're dealing with a malacha of havara. He's literally burning the incense on Shabbos. Again, he set it up on Erev Shabbos. Umis gamrim v'holchim kol yom kulo. And during the entire course of Shabbos, the incense is burning, and the malacha continues, but without his active participation. Umenichim gofris. We're allowed to place sulfur on coals, and again the sulfur when it burns, then it creates some sort of a smoke, and yachshir v'yavlid es kavei atziurim hacharutim aleim. It's very interesting. This is a kind of a tziurim, meaning a kind of an artwork that the black smoke somehow fills in the grooves and creates a beautiful artistic entity. Umis kaprim v'holchim, and the smoke continues to rise from the sulfur kol Shabbos kula for the rest of the Shabbos. Minichim kilar Now here, we have to introduce something called Shrika Samamonim. I assume you know what that is, but just to review it, we don't allow you to take medicine on Shabbos. Generally speaking, we talk about over-the-counter medicine. We're not talking about someone who's ill and he's in bed. And the reason though I prohibited medicine on Shabbos is because he might come to do what's called Shrikas Samamonim. In the older days, the pharmacists used to take the various drugs and they used to pound on them, which is a malach of Ketisha, and that's prohibited on Shabbos. But here, he's allowed to put a kilar, some sort of salve on his eye, al gavi ayin, and the action was done right before Shabbos, and the healing process will happen on Shabbos. The ispolonis is also some sort of a gel, al gavi maka, maybe it has some sort of antiseptic thing. And we're not talking about a makkah of sakana, because again, you're allowed to do any malach on Shabbos, but here, it's refuah. And the process of healing continues on its own during the course of Shabbos. All this is mutter. However, the Braisa concludes with one chumra, with one prohibition. You're not allowed to put kernels of wheat into the mill, the water mill, on Erev Shabbos. Ela b'chdeshi tochanu mibo'od yom. This mill turns around and around and it grinds up the wheat. And that process of grinding... No, I don't think so. What about me? Okay. And the grinding process, which is called tchina, one of the 39 malachas, takes place... unless it takes place before Shabbos. But if it's going to take place during Shabbos, it's prohibited. And the Gemara asks immediately, my time, you know, assuming that this price reflects the Shita Beis Hillel, and he's lenient, and he allows you to start a malacha process that continues and completes itself on Shabbos, what's wrong with getting the mill to work and operate on his behalf to do the grinding? Omar Rabba Mipnei Shemashmas Kol. What that means is that there's a noise of this malacha that continues during the Shabbos. And here we have two different opinions. One opinion is that undermines covered Shabbos when there are these weekday noises going on from the malacha, from the manufacturing process, or here the grinding process. Another approach says that it might look in the eyes of the people as if he turned on the mill, he activated the mill on Shabbos. So now the Gemara asks the following question. Amalei Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef turned to Rabba and he said, V'lema mar mishum shvisas kelim. So this has to be underlined. I mean, shvisas kelim, that's really the heart of our learning for today, called shvisas kelim, which means that the Torah commands us not only that we and our animals are not allowed to do work on Shabbos, but even our utensils are not allowed to work on our behalf on Shabbos. The sign we learned in a Braisa. And this Braisa interprets a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. It says, Ubayom Hashvi'i, the Parshas Kitisa, Ubayom Hashvi'i Tishbo Sloman Yonuach Shorcha Vachamocha Ubechol Asharamati Aleichem Tisha Meru. What's the extra Ubechol? And that's a Ribu L'Rabo Shvisas Kalin. So, Blineder, in the Ian Shia today, we'll talk a little about Shvisas Kalim. Our Kalim have to rest on Shabbos. This is the Doraisa Halacha that Beit Shammai derived from a Pasuk. And Rav Yosef is going to say the following. I don't understand this Braisa. In this Braisa, which assumes that in the case of a mill, you're not allowed to have the mill work for you on Shabbos, because of Shvisas Kelim, you require that your Kelim be in a rest position, and therefore we saw in Beit Shammai all those Isurim that you can't set up the traps, and you can't set up the ink and all that. But yet, in the case of irrigating the field, and in the case of Mugmar, and in the case of Refuah, in all these cases, he wasn't worried about the Kelim. El Amar Rav Yosef Mishum Shvisas Kelim. Rav Yosef says that the Isur of starting a Malacha before Shabbos is a violation of Shvisas Kelim. So the Gemara now asks, V'hashto di Amrit de Lebeis Hillel Isluhu Shvisas Kelim de Oraisa. The Gemara right now assumes that since this Braisa, which reflects the Shita of Beis Hillel, was stringent about the case of the mill, and that's because his mill is working from on Shabbos, that means that even Beis Hillel accepts this principle of Shvisas Kelim. Now, if that be the case, Gofris Umugmar, my time is short. Why does this price permit you to have the coals produce the incense on Shabbos? And the presumption is that he's putting this mugmar, this incense, into some sort of a pot, and he puts the pot on the fire, and the pot is working on his behalf, or the sulfur, the gopher's case. So the Gemara answers, Mishum de loka ovid maisa. It means the following, that the only time that, at least according to Beis Hillel, the Isur of Shvisas Kelim applies is when the Kli is actively involved. It's not in a passive state of rest. So when you put something inside of a pot, and you put the pot on top of the fire, like this case of Gofris or Mugmar, then the pot itself is passive. And the Kli is not Ovid Maisa, it's not doing an action. And the Gemara now ask, what about Unin Shel Pishton? We had a case of bundles of flax, and what he did was, he put these bundles of flax into the oven on Shabbos, and Beis Hillel said it was okay. I mean, not on Shabbos, I mean to say Erev Shabbos. Is my time a sharu? Why is that mutter? The oven is working for him on Shabbos, it's bleaching these bundles of fibers of flax, and the Gemara answers, Mishum de lo ovid maisa umenech nayach. It's the heat inside the oven that bleaches the flax. It's not the tanur. The tanur is not actively doing anything. The tanur is just guarding the heat. But what about mitzudas chayav the ofid dogim? I mean, here the trap actually grabs onto the animal to covid maisa. My time is sharu. Why did Beis Hillel allow that? So Gemara answers, Hosom Nami Biluche. That was a different kind of a case. The Kukre, the low covid Maisa. In other words, what he did was, he didn't trap it with a classic trap. That would be covid Maisa. That would be a problem of Shvisas Kelim. But rather, what happens is that the animal goes in and gets caught inside. Like, for example, if you bait, you know, I don't know if any of you go fishing, right? So you put bait on the hook, and the animal grabs onto the bait. Now, kukre is very interesting. I have a diagram here in my Gemara. I don't know if you have it. And kukre, they have this round kind of a cone-shaped thing. The fish goes into the cone, and it gets caught in the cone. So really, the fish, in a sense, is active, but the cone itself, which is called, in the Gemara's language, kukre, is not active, and therefore there's no violation of Shvisas Kelim. Now the Gemara says the following, Hashta, the Omer of Oshia, Omer of Asi, but we have another statement. Man Tana, who's the Tana of this Braisa, who says that you're not allowed to put the kernels of wheat into the mill? And why is that? Because Shvisas Kelim Do Raisa, says Rav Oshia, in the name of Asi, Beit Shammai, Velo Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel never accepted this principle of Shvisas Kelim. And, LeBeis Shammai, according to the Shita Beit Shammai, Bein Ka'ovid Maisa, Bein Lo Ka'ovid Maisa, Asur. So we have two polar extremes, according to Rav Oshia. We have one extreme that Beis Hillel never accepted Shvisas Kelim, even in the case where the Kli is active. And we have on the other polar extreme Beit Shammai, who accepted the principle of Shvisas Kelim, and that applies even if the Kli is inactive. Every case is Asur. And Le Beis Hillel, Afagav de Kovid Maisa Shari. So according to Beis Hillel, there's no such institution as Shvisas Kelim, and therefore even if the Kli is actively doing a malach on his behalf, that's permissible. Oh, but now we're in trouble. Why? Hashta di amrit le Beit Shammai afal gavdalo avid maisa asur. Now that you're telling me that according to Beit Shammai, there's an absolute all-inclusive prohibition called Shvisas Kalim, even if the Kli is passive. Yehochi, and here we turn to Daf Yud Ches Amid Beis, Mugmar v'gofris, my time asharu, Shamu Beit Shammai. In other words, that brisa that prohibits the mill reflects the Shita Beit Shammai, and the prohibition is based on Shvisas Kalim. And that's a doraisa. So we're not talking about that hashmas kol, you know, the noise of the mill. We're talking about a real violation of a doraisa. So if that brisa, which prohibits the wheat in the mill, working the water mill, is a doraisa violation of Shvisas Kalim, reflecting the sheet of Beit Shammai, in the very same brisa, it says that he's allowed to put the incense on top of the fire, and the incense presumably is inside a kli. So even though that kli is passive, because the heat is coming from the coals, but nevertheless, it should be asur. And Gemara answers, Hosam, manecha ara. The case in the brisa is talking about where the sulfur and the incense was put on the ground, and he didn't use a kli. So the Gemara asks another kasha, what about gigas? Gigas is a barrel in which they used to take the hops, and they used to make they took barley hops and they used to make beer out of it. Now the process of beer making took at least a minimum of 8 days, which means that by definition it covered a Shabbos. And we never heard of any shita that says you're not allowed to make beer. I mean, if you accept this opinion of Shvisas Kalim, you'd never be allowed to make beer. Viner. Let's say, for example, you have a receptacle and you have oil and wicks. You light it on Erev Shabbos, and the Ner continues to work on your behalf on Shabbos. El Kedera. What about a pot that you put on the fire on Erev Shabbos, and it's going to heat up your food on Shabbos? And even if you'll say that the Kedera is only passive, but now it's saying, Afil Delokov in Maisa Shepud. Also, if you have what's called a spit, and you put it through the meat, and you roast the meat, and you're putting it into this rotary on Erev Shabbos, that should be prohibited by time of Shorah Beit Shammai. How could Beit Shammai explain all those cases where the Kli is working on your behalf, albeit passively? And the Gemara says an unbelievable chiddush. You know, this is what I call an ukimta. This is not something that's intuitive when you learn the brisa. And that is the mafkilu afkure, that he declared his utensil to be ownerless. Meaning that the Isa Shvisas Kalim, when the Kli does something for you on Shabbos, it's related to you because it's your Kli. But in all these cases that the Brisa permits it, he declared it as Hefker. So this is really great because, you know, I'm thinking to myself, if I ever want to steal beer, all I have to do is come into your house right before Shabbos, and I could steal all your beer, all your candles, you know, all your utensils, because you have to be mafker them according to Beit Shammai, the hefker. Man tonaluhu d'tonu rabbanon. What are we going to do with the following brisa? Who is the author of this brisa? Lo tamale isha kedera basosis viturmisin. Right, these are kinds of lentils and legumes that need a long process of bishul. They're very hard. And you're not allowed to put them onto the fire in order to cook them in this slow cooking process. V'taniach l'toch tanur erev Shabbos im chashecha. And she's not allowed to place a pot of raw food, let's say, into the oven on erev Shabbos, right before Shabbos, because it'll be cooking on Shabbos. V'im nisonon. And if she violated this Isur and put the kedera, this pot, into the oven on Erev Shabbos, is even Motzai Shabbos Asurim. We're not going to let her benefit from this malacha that took place on Shabbos. And even after Shabbos, she can't eat the contents, Bichdei Shiyasu, until she waits a period of time, which would take the entire Bishul process after Shabbos. Let's say Bishul, in the case of Asosis, would take, 10 hours, so she's going to have to wait 10 hours. So she shouldn't benefit from the malacha that took place on Shabbos. And Kayotzebo, The Brisa says that similar to that is Lo Yavale Nachtum Chovish Shalmayim V'Aniach B'Socha Tanur V'Erev Shabbosim Chashecha. What the baker used to do is he would put a large container of water into the oven on Erev Shabbos so that the water would boil on Shabbos. V'Yim Asa Kein, if he did such a violation, Lo Motzoi Shabbos Asur B'Kdeisha Yasu, he's not allowed to enjoy the benefit of that malacha. So here you have various cases of bishul or afia, where you put something in an oven or over a fire, and the brisa prohibits it. Lema, should we assume Beit Shammaihi velo Beis Hillel, that Beis Hillel would permit it, because who cares if the kelim are doing malacha for you on Shabbos? And now the Gemara comes to a breakthrough. What we're about to learn now is a major breakthrough that has tremendous repercussions, not for this chapter, but for the third chapter of Shabbos. Afilu Tema Beis Hillel, in all these cases of cooking, Beis Hillel would prohibit it, not because of Shvisas Kelim, but Gzeira Hashem Yechata B'Gecholim, he might stoke the fire, the coals. Like, whenever you put something over a fire, which is over coals, in an oven, then since you're very anxious to speed up the process of cooking, you might inadvertently be tempted to take a stick and start stirring or poking the fire. And as a result of poking these coals, the fire goes up, and that's called Meleches Havara. And this, by the way, of course, is the basis for our whole issue of a blech. Why do we need a blech? Because otherwise, if it's an open fire, you might be tempted to tamper with the fire. So the Gemara asks, Yehochi, if Beis Hillel has a gzera that you're not allowed to put something on the fire on Erev Shabbos, is Mugmar V'Gofris Nami Ligzar? And now in the context of Beis Hillel, the Gemara is assuming that the case of Mugmar and Gofris, you know, the sulfur and this incense, that's a classic arrangement in which he puts it not directly onto the coals, but into a pot. Because again, we're not worried about Shvisas Kalim, according to Beis Hillel. But we should be afraid that maybe he'll poke the fire. So Gemara says, Hosam lo machti luhu. In the case of incense, we have no fear that he'll start poking with the flames. Why? The machti, if he would start poking with the flames, the fire would shoot up. And solik buhu kutra vikashi luhu, there would be some sort of a smoke that would immediately shoot up, and it would go into the begadim. Keep in mind, he kept his clothing on top of this incense, and it's going to blacken his clothing. So we're not afraid that he would tamper with the fire. It's got to be a slow process. Leave it alone. Unin shel pishta nami nigzar. Why do we allow bundles of flax being placed into an oven on Erev Shabbos? Maybe he's going to poke the flames. And the Gemara says, we don't have to worry about his poking the flames. Why? Because it's inside an oven. Every oven has a door. And in order to poke the coals and stir them, he would have to open the door. He's not going to open the door. Why? Hasam came into Kashilu Zeka. The wind that will enter into the oven when he opens the door of the oven is Kashi. Luhu. Kashilu means it's detrimental to these fibers that he's trying to heat up. And therefore, Lo Magali, he would not open up the oven. We're not afraid that he'll open up the oven and then come to poke the flames. So the Gemara asked, Semer Liore, why does Beis Hillel allow you to put wool into a cauldron, and here also maybe it'll be mechata? And the Gemara answers, be akura v'tucha. He's only allowed to do this if he takes the cauldron off the fire. That's called akura. And tucha in the Hebrew translation is tach betit saviv kisuya lisosma, which means that they used to seal with a sort of a concrete paste the lid cover onto the cauldron. So in other words, there are two reasons here why we're not really afraid. First of all, he took the cauldron off the fire. And secondly, he attached and pasted the covering onto the cauldron. So what so what would be the chashash over here? He says we wouldn't be choshesh that he would break open the seal, because if he gets involved in breaking open the seal, he'll certainly remember that it's Shabbos. Now, you might ask me, well, what's the big deal of if it's off the fire? In the worst case scenario, he would not poke the flames. It's already off the flames. But that has to do with another concept, which is major in the laws of Bishul of cooking, which is called Hagasa. Hey, Gimel, Samach, Hey. Which means that when something is cooking in hot, boiling water, you're not allowed to mix it around. So you'll tell me maybe he'll mix it around in order to speed up the process of this dye. You know, the dye has to enter into the wool. The answer is that we're not afraid he'll do such a thing, because he'll remind himself once he sees that he sealed down the lid. Now, based on this whole discussion that we're not allowed to leave things in an oven because he might come to stir the oven, or stir the coals in the oven, like we discussed before about these kinds of legumes that need long-term cooking, is hashda diomar mar. Now that you've said that you can't leave these legumes in a pot, in an oven, on Shabbos, you can't put it on an Erev Shabbos. Gzeira shem yichata b'kolim, we're afraid. And even Basil is worried about maybe he'll stir the coals. Is high kedera chaisa? Let's say you have raw meat, and you put it into a pot, and you put it right before Shabbos on the fire, on the coals. Shari, Basil would allow it. La nuche erev Shabbos imchashech b'tanura. You're allowed to put it into the oven erev Shabbos. My timer. We're only afraid Erev Shabbos for food that he might serve on Friday night, in the Friday night meal. And since he's so nervous to make sure that it cooks before the Friday night meal, therefore he might come to poke the coals. But here, in a case of raw meat, no matter how much he pokes the coals and how hot the fire is, it's not going to cook. You know, he knows that he's not going to be able to use it until tomorrow for the Shabbos main meal at lunch. Is therefore suche mesech daite emine. He completely takes it out of his mind. And therefore he's not standing over the pot to make sure that it cooks. And therefore lo osi lichtuye gecholam. We're not afraid that it'll come to poke the flames. So, my friends, this has to do with the case of a cholent. Let's say you put a cholent on the fire before Shabbos, and you have a problem because of this gzera of chatuye gcholim. So they may tell you, I'm not paskening, but they may tell you to put a piece of raw meat inside this pot, and then we're no longer afraid of chituye b'gcholim. Next, ubashil. What happens if you have something that's completely cooked and it's edible, and you want to put it into the oven on Erev Shabbos? Shapir dummy, that's fine. He's allowed to do that. If it's already fully cooked, he's not tempted to want to poke the flames. But bashil, the low bashil, if it's in this middle stage, where it's partially cooked but not totally cooked, aser, that's when we're worried about chitui gecholim. Because if he speeds up the process, he'll be able to eat it tonight, and that's what he wants to do. Tonight meaning Friday night. He's going to be Mamayr as Habishul. Now here we have a major machlokas Rishonim as to what Bashil v'lo Bashil means. Some Rishonim say that it didn't even reach the lowest level of Bishul, which is called Kemaychel ben Josai. And others say, no, it reached Kemaychel ben Josai, but nevertheless, if you tamper with the flame and you take it from Kemaychel ben Josai, which is a real basic level of Bishul, you take it all the way to Nisbashel Kol Tzarko, that also is a violation of Meleches Bishul. So that's gigantic controversy, which Amir Tzashem will talk about in the third perek, the perek of Bishul. Vishodabe Garma Chaya, but if he puts into the pot that's partially cooked and partially not cooked some sort of a limb of the animal, and it's not cooked at all, it's raw, as we said before, Shapir Dami, then it's okay, and we're not afraid. Vahashta Diomar Mar. Now, based on whatever we said, is called midi the koshi le zeka loma galile. Right, we spoke about cases where if he opens the door, the wind comes in, and that has a detrimental effect on his on whatever he's cooking inside the tanur, and therefore we're not afraid that he might come to chitus. Therefore, high bisra de gadya. Now we're talking about goat's meat, vish ushrik shapir domi. Now ushrik means he's got two things in favor. One thing is that the goat's meat is very sensitive, and if wind comes in by opening the tanur, it really could ruin the quality of this meat. And secondly, shrik means he already plastered down the cover, attaching it to the utensil, whether it be the pot or the oven. Is shapir domi, then it's okay. So notice he has two conditions that have to be met. Number one, the meat itself, if you expose it by opening the tanur, that will be detrimental. And number two, he took this cement and he cemented the opening, the lid, onto the utensil. But barcha is already ram's meat, and ram's meat is very tough, and it is not affected by opening the door of the oven. The low shark, and he didn't plaster down the cover, is awesome because now he has two things against him. Okay, now let's see. What if he has one positive? For example, the gadya of a low shark, or the barcha of a shark. So he takes this soft meat that's very sensitive. He wouldn't want to open the door, but he didn't plaster the door. Or he has this very tough meat, ram's meat, and he plastered the door. And here we have a machlokas between Rav Ashi and Rav Yirmiyahu. Rav Ashi shari. Rav Ashi says all you need is one condition, and that's a mitigating circumstance. Rav Yirmiyahu midifti says no, it's also you need both conditions to be matir. So the Gemara now asks, ula Rav Ashi de shari. If Rav Ashi allows you to put this into the oven, is what do we do with the Mishnah? This is the Mishnah later. Ain't solin basar batzel ubeitza. You're not allowed to roast meat or onions or eggs. Ela kadeshi tzolim odyom, unless the roasting process will complete itself before Shabbos. And it sounds like basar here is an all-inclusive term, unqualified, and even refers to the case of a gedi. And we said in the case of a gedi, according to Rav Ashi, goat's meat, you're allowed to leave it in this oven. So the Gemara answers, Hasam de barcha velo sharik. Rav Ashi is going to have to interpret that Mishnah is referring, number one, to ram's meat, where you could open the door, and you didn't plaster the door. So you have two strikes against you. Ika di amri. Now there's another tradition that the gadya, in a case of goat's meat, bein sharik, bein lo sharik, whether he plastered down the cover of the oven or he didn't, shapir domi, it's okay. Debarcha nami ushrik shapir domi, and even in a case of ram's meat, if he plasters it down, then he's allowed to do it. And no one debates this. In other words, in this second tradition, the Ika Diami Lishna Basra, everybody, even Rabbi Yirmi, agrees that all you need is one positive factor, either the nature of the meat or the fact that he plastered down the cover. Ki pligi, what's the machlokes? Debarcha velo sharik. You have two strikes against you. It's very tough meat. You can open the oven and the wind would not damage it, and he didn't bother plastering down the cover. The Rav Ashi Shari, And Rav Ashi nevertheless is matir it, even though there are two strikes against it. And Rav Yirmiyah midifti osir. Because Rav Yirmiyah is only going to be matir if you have one of the two, either the nature of the meat, or the fact that he plastered down the covering. So the Gemara asks Rav Ashi dishari, if Rav Ashi holds that any kind of meat, even ram's meat, and even if he doesn't plaster down the covering, it's mutter, is what do we do with the Mishnah later on? Ain't solen basar batzel u beitzel kadeshi solen vodyom. You're not allowed to cook, roast meat. Hasam bibisra agumre. What is the case that Rav Ashi does agree that we're afraid of chitu b'gecholim? That's called the case of meat on gumri. Gumri means that you roast the meat directly on the coals. And once you do that, even Rav Ashi has to agree that we're afraid that you might poke the fire. So that, according to Rav Ashi, as long as there's some sort of an oven, it doesn't matter what kind of meat, it doesn't matter plastered, it's mutter, but if it's directly on the coals, then it's asur. Amar Ravina says, hi, kara, which is a kind of a gourd, chaya, and it's raw, shaper dummy, you're allowed to put it in the oven on Erev Shabbos, came in the kashi lezeka, because again, if you open the door of the oven, the wind will damage this, kibisra de gadya dummy, it has the same status as goat's milk. Beit Shammai Omer main mochrim l'nochri, vein toadim imo vein magbiyan olav, ad kadeshi agil l'mokum kor beisil matirim. Tanur Rabbanan, we learned in the Brisa, Beit Shammai Omerim lo yimkar adam cheftzo l'nochri, on Erev Shabbos he shouldn't sell something to a guy. V'lo yash ilenu, and he shouldn't lend him an object to be used, which the guy will return in the same, the same state that it's in. Velo yalvenu, and he shouldn't lend him an object, and the guy took upon himself a financial commitment to pay back the money, the value of this object. Velo yite lo b'matana, and he shouldn't even give a gift to a guy on Erev Shabbos. El kadeshi agil abeso, unless it's early enough for the guy to get home before Shabbos, because otherwise the Nachri is going to be carrying this object in a Rishus Harabim, in a public domain on Shabbos, and the spectators will make a mistake and they will think that he was commissioned to do so by the Jew. They don't realize that the Jew lent him the object. Beisil Omrim, Beisil say Kadeshi Agil Lebayis HaSomach L'choma. We don't have to give him enough time that he reaches his house. We only have to give him enough time that he gets close to the outer outskirts of the city where he lives. You know, they had a wall around the city. And Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kadesh Yetze Mi Pesach Beso. All we need is a minute so that the guy could start on his merry way. Amar Rav Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Hain Divri Rabbi Akiva, Hain Divri Rabbi Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva saying the same thing. And really, Rabbi Akiva is just reflecting the Shita of Beis Hillel. Shalobah Rabbi Akiva El Lefaresh Divri Beis Hillel. Rabbi Akiva only meant to interpret Beis Hillel and tell us that what Beis Hillel meant was that all he needs is enough time to get on his way before Shabbos. And there are two versions of Beis Hillel. According to one version, the Tanakhama holds that according to Beis Hillel, you have to have enough time for him to get to the house, the closest house on the outskirts of the city, near the wall. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, Beis Hillel only requires enough time that he could go outside. And here's where we're going to stop for today. Tomorrow we're going to discuss Chametz Pesach. So that's something that's very relevant to this time of day. So we'll wish everyone a great day, and thank you so much for coming. And if anybody's interested later on today, maybe we'll have a shiur in the Haggadah. That would be at 7:30. let me know if, you know, or just show up, I guess. And we'll see who shows up. All right, then? Okay.
I have a question.
Yes, Rabbi. Please. Please.
With the chulun, you put the raw meat in on Friday before Shabbos, so there's no question of you needing to stir it for your meal on Friday night.
Right.
How come the rabbis are not worried that when you get up in the morning the next day and you see that it's not yet cooked enough for you to eat?
Right, the assumption we're working with is that once you get the 10 hours, you know, between Erev Shabbos and the morning, by that time it's already pretty much fully cooked. In other words, what we're talking about is a situation where speeding up the process is not going to help you, because it really needs at least, you know, through the night until raw meat will cook. Okay, then?
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to just run now to a shear on Masechta Erevin. Okay.